This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3081 for Monday the 25th of May 2020. Today's show is entitled, Wider Formal Verification. Quote, it is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 19 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutor2 talks about testing and formal verification of software.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, you're listening to the Hacker Public Radio, and this is Tuukka Turto. Today's episode is about the spectrum of software verification or testing. I made an episode, that, I think it was 3057, about formal verification with the GOG, and forgot one very important detail, namely, why on earth would you like to do that? So hopefully this episode will hopefully answer that question. So, when you're talking about testing or verification, there's a lot of different ways of doing that. People really love giving them names and categorizing things, and more than once I have had a discussion where people have disagreed and then later on realized that they were disagreeing, not because they were of different opinion, but because of they were talking with different terms. So I'm going to use those terms that I'm most familiar with in here. So if you talk about manual testing, in my opinion, that's something that people do obviously, and that tries to answer to the questions like, is the software, is it fluid, is it pleasant to use? Does it work with a screen reader? Can colorblind people use it? Does it make sense? Is it like, can you achieve the software what you want to achieve? And is it painful or pleasant to use? Things like that. These are really hard for computers to answer. But as soon as we start, and this is what I usually consider testing, you know, like real testing. Well, not real, but testing. As soon as we start writing, and in my opinion, that part should be given in, you should be, the tester should have a very loose guidance or instructions how what to do. If they are executing script that says that put number this field, put number that field, press this button and verify that this third field reads some specific amount, and then in my opinion, that's a waste of time and human brain power, because computer can do that. Humans will be doing things that things that humans can do, but computers cannot. But, so, as soon as we start talking about examples, like I said, do this and verify that the result is this, then in my opinion, that's something that computers should be doing. And the very lowest, and well, not lowest, probably the first this kind of test that people encounter, like I said, in a UI level or in a code level, but in any case, they are just like, with this input, the result should be this. And it works. Like, and they are relatively easy to write and understand. But the thing is that this example covers only one specific case. Like, for example, if we are joining two lists together, and we are doing that with, we want to verify that with examples, we need at least 9 different tests, because you want to, you have most obvious interesting cases. You have a empty list, you have a list of one item, and you have a list of many items. And if you, and two, you have two of those, so you have 3 times 3 tests, basically. Like, did I miscount it? No, 3 times 3, I think that is. Yeah. So like you want to combine 2 0 0 length list and verify that the result is a 0 and length list, and you want to combine 0 length and 1 item and verify that it's the 1 item list with a, obviously with the correct item, and then you want to do it the other way around, 1 item list combined with the 0 item list, and see that that works. So you get 9 tests, and usually these are discovered, these test cases, by staring the code very sternly, or by analyzing the code, thinking aloud that, and trying to find what would be the interesting cases. But the important thing is that they only cover some of the inputs. You could write plenty of tests, like you could write up to 100 items lists and every combination that, but then that would be 100 to the power of 2, and that's 10,000 different tests, and you don't want to write those by hand. So you have to focus these tests to those interesting cases that you can discover by looking at the code. If you, and the next step from here would be writing property-based tests. Like, here you try to capture properties of the function or piece of code or UI, whatever you're testing. Like, if you are combining two lists, one property would be that in the resulting list, there will be all the items of these two lists that you combined in a correct order. And another would be that the length of the new list is sum of length of those two lists that you combine. And then you have to tell the computer that this function accepts these kinds of parameters. You have to tell it that this takes two lists of 0 or more items. And then when you are executing the test, the computer will randomly generate you test cases, for example, some arbitrary amount, 500 different test cases, starting with the simple ones and then getting using longer and longer lists. And if you are using strings, maybe with some odd characters and things like that. So, and for each and every of those generated tests, it will verify that the properties that you defined are true, they hold. And if not, it will report that, hey, this specific case failed. Some tools even try to minimize the test case. So as soon as they encounter a failing test, they try to make it smaller. Like if it's a 1 million element list, they try to with shorter list and see if it still fails. They try to find as simple example that fails as possible. Other tools have databases that keep track of all the failed tests over time. So when you start a new test run, they will execute those failed tests first to see that there hasn't been regression. And when those have been executed, they will start generating more test data. But again, this will cover bigger amount of inputs, but this cannot cover in all cases, this cannot cover all the inputs. If you have 2 booleans, for example, then, and you are doing some operation with them, you have 4 combinations. That one you can actually specify by hand. But if you have some amount of coolants and you are doing some operation to them and the amount of combination is reasonably small, this can cover all the combinations. But if in case you are doing something with numbers, like some big numbers, then this cannot cover all the possible combinations. But this can cover much larger area of the inputs. But then if you have some really critical software that, or you have some contractual obligation that you have to be really, really super sure that there is no problems, you can try going with the formal proofs. And this is the thing that I talk about in that episode 3057, formal verification with Gog. Here you treat the code as a mathematical function, because if you look them from the certain angle, they are identical. Like code and mathematics are different sides of the same coin, basically. And then you can prove mathematically that these properties that somebody wants your list joining function to have actually hold. I didn't do this by hand, but I would think if I had to do this, I would start with both lists at a zero length and prove that you get the resulting list is a zero length list. And then if your first one is a zero length and second one is n plus one items, I would be using induction and again prove that. And then the first one is n plus one items and the second one is zero items. And the last, usually the most tricky to prove, is that both are n plus one items, and then prove it that it n is any arbitrary number here. The reason why we would be doing this is because we would be using the induction, mathematical induction, because if we can prove that the function works as we want with a zero and n plus one, then we can say that it works with everything, because n plus one is one or two or three or four or whatever. So you could prove that no matter how long list we give to this function, the resulting list will be, length will be the sum of those two lists, and they will be all items present in correct order. But so why aren't we doing this? The thing is that this is suitable only for certain languages. The functions that you are proving, they have to be real mathematical functions. So data in, data out, and no touching hard drive, no sending messages to another systems, nothing. Just data in, data out. They can call other functions, but those other functions have to obey the same rules, data in, data out. So it really has to be a mathematical view on the software. And that's not actually that difficult. It's just because it's different than what people are usually used to. It takes a bit of time to change your brain to look code a little bit differently and learn different ways of abstracting and combining and splitting the software and all that stuff that every software developer does every day. But the biggest one is probably because the proving is really tricky. It takes lots of time and effort until you are really good at that. And if redoing tests is frustrating when you change the software, imagine how frustrating it must be redoing the proofs. Because tests usually look the, for example, function outside. They have an interface and they give data into that and they get data out of that, and then they can verify that this data that we gave in and this output that we got out, that they are what we want it to be. So it's a bit easier. But when you're proving mathematically that the code does what it should be, you are looking inside of the function. You are looking how it has been implemented. And if that implementation changes very drastically, then your proof isn't valid anymore and you have to redo it. And then, of course, the usual thing, tests or mathematical proofs don't guarantee correctness. So you can have all the tests you want, you can have all the proofs that you want, but your software still isn't correct. This is because the original spec could be wrong. The original specification could be wrong. Whoever wrote it made a mistake. Or they could have omitted something completely obvious to themselves that is not obvious to the developers who are going to write it. Or the developer who is reading the specification misunderstood it. Or somebody could have made a mistake while writing a test or a theorem that they're proving. Like, for example, somebody could write that I want a function that combines two lists together. And they forgot to mention that, by the way, in this business field that we are working on, every time we are combining lists, we are putting a comma in between for whatever reason. But because this is not written in the specification, then the developer doesn't know that, and then they cannot implement it correctly. Or it could be that the person who write that I want to combine these two lists wanted that the resulting list only has the each item once. So if you have a list 1, 2, 3 and another list 2, 3, 4, the resulting list will be 1, 2, 3, 4. So duplicates will be dropped. And for them it might be completely obvious. For example, if they are making a list of cars that are in the storehouse, of course the one car is not list only once because they only have one car. You don't have a same car twice in the bookkeeping. So for them that is completely obvious, but for the developer that probably isn't completely obvious. But if they had been saying that we want to, instead of lists, we want to use sets, because then the developer might understand that, hey, set, that's always only unique items. So it's not that easy. So as a summary, so there's a cost versus gain here. Like, some things are best tested by humans, sometimes things are best tested by the automated examples, or verified rather. So you have do this, and this happens, that type of things. But you can only cover some specific cases in that way. You cannot cover all the cases. If you want to a bit more broader verification, you use property-based testing, or rather different kind of verification. You use property-based testing because then the computer generates your test data and you verify that your system can handle that test data, be it booleans or be it whatever huge lists or accounting books of some company. Computer can generate you that data and then use that to verify that your software works correctly. Or you can go all out and mathematically prove that your software does what it is supposed to do, but then you have to use specific languages and the cost will be much higher because it will be much slower. But in this case, you can cover all the inputs. Hopefully that clarifies why on earth will you want to, or why you wouldn't want to do formal verification with GOG or some other tool. If you have any questions, comments or feedback, I'm always interested to hear them. You can reach me by email or at the Fediverse, where I'm tuturto@mastodon.social. Keep on hacking.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.